Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
Unfortunately, not living a life of jazz music, so I have not ended up sad and lonely, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I'll be a great musician because of that.
The statement you made is correct. You do not live the life of a jazz musician. Hey, guys. We are brought to you by supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow for only $2 a month to gain access to all of our bonus content, including, for the summer at least, weekly reviews of King of the Hill until we get to the next season of The Simpsons, monthly bonus episodes, weekly written articles by me, bad drawings for every single episode we do, and more. I strongly encourage you to go check it out. We are ad-free because of it. Also, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music or any of those places, wherever you listen to us, whatever podcatcher service you use. Give us a 5-star review, subscribe. Let people know that you like the show. We really appreciate it. Helps new listeners find us. This week's episode is Round Springfield. I didn't include round with a little apostrophe in there. I guess I should do that.
Springfield, it might be round as well as around.
Yeah, it's
maybe it's just about how Springfield is a circle.
Apostrophes are... File names are sometimes don't like apostrophes, so I try and avoid them. This is episode 2F32, originally aired April 30th, 1995. Written by Al Jean and Mike Reiss. Story with a teleplay by Joshua Sternin and Jeffrey Ventimiglia. Which, what that means is that Al Jean and Mike Reiss came up with the idea, and then Joshua Sternin and Jeffrey Ventimiglia wrote it. Like, actually filled in
they
the
broke
blanks.
It down into dialogue and
yes.
instructions. Those
did most of the work, is what I take from that. It was directed by Stephen Dean Moore. This is his first episode he directed, since he has directed at least one episode in every single season after this one.
That means he brings donuts to the writer's room.
Who's Stephen Dean Moore?
That's how you get invited back every season. You're the one who brings donuts or pizza.
I mean, it's not a bad idea. I generally like people who bring me food.
Indeed.
Yeah, this episode... They didn't have enough time to make as many episodes as they wanted with the regular crew, so to speak. So they brought back Al Jean and Mike Reiss, who ran the show for seasons 3 and 4 and have since ran seasons post all this, to do this one episode to kind of take a load off of the showrunners for this season. And they wanted story credit because they thought this episode would win awards. It didn't win any awards.
Yeah, it really didn't. I don't recall. I didn't look anything up for this episode, but I do remember at the time people not really liking it a whole lot, and I'm not really sure why.
I don't want to tip my hand too much, Matt, but we'll talk about it. Finished 60th the ratings that week. Nielsen rating of 8.2. Fourth highest ratio on Fox that week. Episode guest stars Ron Taylor as Bleeding Gums Murphy. Steve Allen returning as himself for the second time. I believe he was in, Bart the Murderer? He made his first appearance?
And then, yes.
And then we have Phil Hartman as a small appearance as Lionel Hutz.
A very small, like maybe 30 seconds.
Yeah, but he performs well in that for the small role he has. There's no such thing as a small role, Matt. There's only such thing as small performers.
Indeed, and I don't believe that applies.
Small voiced performers?
I don't think they're small people. They seem like average.
Well, I know Phil Hartman was at least average sized man.
Exactly, that's what I was trying to say. Sorry.
Ron Taylor was a relatively large man.
Exactly.
Episode begins with Krusty the Clown on television talking about his sexual harassment suit with his new court-ordered sidekick and the Percodan addiction.
Miss No Means No.
Miss No Means No. Very, I don't know. She's on message.
She is extremely on message, and it's a message that a lot of people could still stand to learn.
Yeah, I agree. Krusty also, after Bart predicts that, and then Krusty quickly fulfills that prediction by blaming it on his Percodan addiction, which... Percodan's painkiller. I don't know. It generally doesn't alter your behavior that much. Marge's pop quiz on history? Oh, George Washington Carver. Yes,
yeah.
That is a good... That it's a very... I almost pulled it, but it's like 3 seconds long. And I wish they had gone somewhere with it. But Marge asks Bart who George Washington Carver is, and he replies that he's the guy who chopped up George Washington.
Which, if you don't really know, that's a good guess, I guess.
Yeah, it's not. It's pretty clever, actually, for a quick response like that from Bart. We do get Bart, unknown to him, eating Krusty-O cereal, and apparently they are including jagged metal Krusty-O's in every box.
It's very important to have that.
I disagree. I would think you should not package those things into food product. But he ends up eating one and almost immediately has a sore stomach, which I would assume, like, you swallow something sharp and metal, probably not good for you. Lisa's the only one who believes him. Both Homer and Marge both think he's just crying wolf.
Which, you know, is not, they have reason to believe so.
Yeah, it's not crazy to think that Bart would be trying to fake an illness to get out of a quiz. He goes to school anyway. Miss Krabappel also does not believe that he is actually ill. And she actually has to show him the school rules that back her up.
Mrs. Krabappel, I can't take the test. I have a stomach ache.
Well, that's a lame excuse for an excuse.
Look, if you ignore me and I die, you'll get in a lot of trouble.
Read page 6 of the school charter.
No teacher shall be held accountable if Bart Simpson dies.
We're also absolved if Milhouse gets eaten by the school snake.
Hey, cool! There's a rabbit in here!
Milhouse is in a snake.
It's important to have these. That's why teachers' unions need to have negotiating power.
Milhouse is in the snake, which we see again. When Bart is allowed to go finally to the nurse, who is just Lunch Lady Doris.
Lunch Lady Doris? Why are you here?
Budget cuts. They've even got groundskeeper Willie teaching French.
Bonjour, you cheese-eating surrender monkeys!
Look, my stomach really hurts.
All I can give you are these chewable Prozac for kids. Your choice. Manic depressive mouse or the bluebird of unhappiness.
Superintendent Chalmers, I'd like you to meet our new school nurse, Lunch Lady Doris.
Yeah, nice to see you. Seymour, why is that student lying unconscious on the floor?
Well, in many cases, the floor is the best. Oh, look, here comes Lumpy, the school snake. Oh, Lord.
Oh, the children getting eaten by snakes is a pretty common theme in this episode for some reason.
Yeah, and that's a large snake.
Not the kind of thing you would expect an elementary school to have.
I would hope that a school would be wise enough to keep snakes to a size that can't eat children. Also, we hear the cheese-eating surrender monkeys. I wanted to include that because it has become part of the lexicon since Indeed. This episode. And like a lot of Simpsons things, I'm not a huge fan of it because it has been usurped by people who don't understand the whimsical nature of the Simpsons.
And who believe it, even though it's patently false.
Yes. It's a funny one thing that Groundskeeper Willie can say, and we can all laugh, but we don't. Bart goes to the hospital. It needs an appendectomy, which apparently they did ask a doctor for what could be done for this. And this is not your appendix would not be injured by you swallowing it.
Yeah, your throat would be destroyed and your stomach would get a lot of perforations in it. I don't know where your appendix comes in.
It's an easy thing. You can just say, hey, they needed their appendix out. That is the least of the factual problems in this. But Bart, he goes under surgery with Dr. Nick assisting Dr. Hibbert, which is a weird thing.
Well, there's only two doctors in the whole world.
I guess Springfield only has two doctors, so you need... I'd prefer Dr. Hibbert be the anesthetist, and Dr. Nick would actually... I would prefer them reverse their roles, honestly.
Yeah, because the anesthetists, they're the ones who can really screw it up.
Yeah, like, if you get too much, you just die. Bart makes it out the other side, is choked by Homer almost immediately upon being awakened. Gets to miss a week of school, and all the kids all want their appendixes out because they think it's cool and they want to miss a week of school and they have to get a cool scar. And Dr. Hibbert's just like, yeah, sure, just have everyone, all the kids can have one. Yeah. But
it's not the most responsible thing for a doctor to say.
No,
but hey,
not
I'm sure
really.
He makes money.
But finally, we get I don't know, it very much does the hey. We have an act one thing that actually leads to the actual story, mm-hmm. which is Lisa, while in the hospital, poor Bart sees and, well, hears first is Bleeding Gums Murphy, who is also in the hospital. I don't think they ever identify why he's actually in the hospital, do they?
They do not, no.
No.
That's one of the things that always bugged me about this episode, is he's just in the hospital and then dies.
Yeah, he's, if he was on the run of the Steve Allen Tonight Show.
He's old.
That was in the 50s. So even in 95, when this aired, it would put him in his 70s, probably.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Which he seems like, yeah.
I don't, like, we never got an age on Bleeding Gums Murphy. And of course, The Simpsons kind of like the floating timeline about when and how old people are kind of makes it all kind of meaningless because what? And I don't know what, and they do allude to Bleeding Gums kind of lifestyle as a jazz musician. So maybe that is supposed to lead us in that direction. Is like, that is why he's ill.
He's got some sort of disease.
Maybe we get a brief, like a flashback, right?
To all of the crazy things he's done.
Well, to Moaning Lisa, basically. And then it goes to Act Two, for the most part. Right? We get the Moaning Lisa flashback, and then basically it cuts to Act Two, which Matt has the... Act Two is extraordinarily long. Like, it is half of the episode.
Yes, it is extremely long. And we start off with back in the hospital with Lisa and Bleeding Gums Murphy with Dr. Hibbert there. And we learn a terrible secret.
I don't really have a family. All I had was a little brother who grew up to become a doctor. He used to laugh at the most inappropriate times.
Hey, I've got an older brother that I'll never see. He's a jazz musician or some such. Go well. Bye-bye.
So this is where we have that it's now canon that Bleeding Gums Murphy and Dr. Hibbert brothers.
Yeah, which...
Which means he also has a brother who works at the Shelbyville Orphanage.
Yes, Dr. Hibbert has at least two brothers.
True, neither of which he knows about.
No.
Here is where we get the extended flashback of Bleeding Gums Murphy, his life of jazz. He apparently started at the feet of he studied at the feet of blind Willie Witherspoon, who apparently played an umbrella. I don't know how you study jazz at the feet of someone who plays an umbrella, but apparently everyone thought it was funny except for blind Willie Witherspoon.
It is one of my favorite guys in this episode. He's like, we thought it was funny. We just let you do it. I'm like,
That isn't funny.
No.
We get to see Bleeding Gums Murphy on Steve Allen's Tonight Show, which, like Robbie mentioned, was in the 50s. So this really dates it when apparently Steve Allen was all about himself because all of his books have his name in them somehow. We then see that Bleeding Gums Murphy got to cut his own album, Sax on the Beach, which earned him a lot of money that he spent on Fabergé eggs.
Okay.
Which he then ate?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. First Sax on the Beach, good name. I really like it.
Real best jazz album name.
That's a really good name. Second, do you know what a Fabergé egg is, Matt?
Indeed I do. It is gold and gems and not the kind of thing you eat.
Well, you are correct. I looked this up because I wanted to know. Fabergé eggs were made mostly for the Russian nobility pre-revolution. So late 19th century, early 20th century. And there's a few floating around that were given to others not in the nobility. There's very few of them left. Like, some of them didn't even make it. Like, we don't know where they are. They were broken and destroyed. We don't know. After the revolution. They are the most recent sale one was $10 million for one egg.
Yeah, so they're not the kind of thing a jazz musician could afford.
Yeah, and $1,500 a day is not... I mean, maybe imitation Fabergé eggs?
That's kind of what I was assuming, because he goes into a store that has a ton of them.
Yeah,
and
generally, like...
There aren't that many in the world.
Yeah, you have to go to, like, Russia to see any more than, like, five at a time.
Yeah.
And like a very one place that are high, very, they're priceless. You know, if you have to have millions and millions of dollars. I did not understand that as a kid. I had no idea what the hell a Fabergé egg was. I'm like, why is he eating like a jeweled thing? Like, I didn't get the joke at all. I'm like, what is going on? And now it still doesn't make sense, but for a different reason.
Yeah. So I think you got the joke as a kid. You were just like, that doesn't make any sense. And that was the joke. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, we then see Bleeding Gums Murphy on The Cosby Show, where he had a guest spot, and we get some Cosby comedy. And that's all we're going to say about that.
I was just going to say, I do want to say that it every time, like, we're going to get to the point where they stop talking about The Cosby Show because it wasn't relevant much anymore. But
probably wasn't relevant at this point.
It wasn't really. It was only because they had a lot of former jazz musicians on the Cosby Show. Bill Cosby liked jazz, so he had a lot of jazz musicians on his show. With all the stuff that's been brought to light, it does not help bring any levity to an episode that is already kind of focused a lot on death. So
indeed. So at the end of Bleeding Gums Murphy's story, Lisa says that, oh, a lifetime of jazz leaves you sad and lonely. And, well, unless you're Kenny G, that's probably true.
Matt, I hate to break this to you. Kenny G does not perform jazz music.
What? But he plays a saxophone.
You're technically correct. He does play a saxophone.
The best kind of correct.
But that it is not jazz saxophone.
That's true. What does Kenny G fall into? Adult contemporary,
yes,
or
that is
easy listening?
Yes, both of those things. If you ask any...
Him and Willie Nelson hang out together, obviously.
I don't. Willie Nelson also does not play adult contemporary, despite King of the Hill insisting that he does.
Anyway. Lisa and Bleeding Gums talk for a little bit longer, and then we move on to Krusty's press conference, where he is asked a question about Bart and the Jagged Middle O.
What about that little boy who got appendicitis from eating your cereal?
To prove that this Middle O is harmless, I will personally eat one. See, there's nothing. God, go! Yeah! Oh, boy! This thing is shredding my insides!
Krusty. That wasn't the middle one. That was a regular Krusty-O.
It's poison.
I just like to point out that I have, utilized Krusty's It's Poison line in exactly that voice on several occasions when voicing my distaste for something. So.
He's not lying.
He's not lying, I bet. Lisa stops brushing her teeth so that she can play more like Bleeding Gums, as she tells her the next time she's in the hospital, right before her recital. And to prepare for said recital, she jams with Bleeding Gums because they both have their saxophones. And then we get a rendition of what's the song, Robbie?
Jazz Man by Carole King.
Yes, which, as I recall, isn't actually jazz.
It's more like... No, the song itself is not a jazz song. It has a lot of saxophone in it, which I assume is why they chose it, because it both is about a jazz man. I mean, like, it is like that is accurate. It is about a man like Bleeding Gums Murphy to a certain extent. There's a lot of saxophone in it, which is, I assume, why they chose to use this song for those two reasons. So it gives them like a reason to showcase the saxophone. I don't want to be mean. I don't like this song very much. Yeardley Smith does a tremendous performance. I will say.
Okay, I just want to make sure you weren't going to be down on her.
No, she does
a great song.
No, she does a great job. Like, oh, there's nothing wrong with the performance part of it. I just don't think. It's a very catchy song. Like, I just don't like the song that much. Like, the saxophone in it is good. I kind of wish they would have just chosen jazz music or just wrote some jazz music.
I think the biggest problem with that is that it would have been mostly instrumental, because most jazz music seems to be instrumental, except for a few, very popular tunes. And it generally is not something peppy enough to be included in an episode like this, I feel like.
Well, I was going to wait a little bit. Actually, I will. You continue, Matt, and I'll pop in with some words after a certain event happens.
Fair enough. All right, then. During this rendition of Jazz Man, you get to see throughout the hospital as everyone is dancing once they hear it, and Dr. Hibbert stitches I Love Jazz into somebody on the surgeon's table, which is not cool.
That's not good, no.
No, it's not. And someone who's in a coma, their I think it's an EKG monitor, goes to the beat. It's very, Simpsons-y. And we also see Barney get a Pabst for a 5-minute AA chip, which didn't know they gave 5-minute chips, but hey,
they
apparently,
well,
to Mo it's worth something.
For Barney, they'll make them. He needs them.
It's true. It's like 5 minutes. Wow, that's pretty impressive. From there, we move back to Bleeding Gums and Lisa, who finish the song. And at that point, Bleeding Gums gives Lisa his saxophone. It's not really telegraphed here, but I think Bleeding Gums knows that he's not going to be around much longer. And he basically wants the really only person he has left in his life to have his most important possession. Lisa is, of course, just, I don't want to use the word gobsmacked, but she is very, very grateful to him.
Well, I mean, I think that she is, it's very, like, that is his saxophone, and I feel like it is, it's, you're right, it's not, I don't know, I have very mixed feelings about this, but continue, Matt. I'm
okay. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it at the end.
Yeah, I'm going to get into it in a bit anyway, but you go ahead.
Oh, okay. We then move on to the school recital that Lisa is going to be performing at. The school recital is sold out, but Barbra Streisand tickets are still available. And they probably still are. So, you know, if you want to go to a Barbra Streisand show at an elementary school back in the 90s, you can probably still get tickets.
Barbra Streisand is... She still does very well. I don't... maybe indeed. At this particular time...
I'm sure she performs in Vegas for millions of dollars.
Yeah, the tickets for Barbra Streisand are extraordinarily expensive, but I maybe there was a lull in the 90s when I was too young to realize it.
No worries. Principal Skinner lets us know that most of the children are out, but for a very good reason.
Now, I have learned that most of the orchestra is having their appendixes removed, so without further ado, I give you the remnants of the Springfield Elementary School Orchestra. On saxophone, Lisa Simpson. On triangle, Martin Prince. And with a flute up his nose, Ralph Wiggum.
That's some nice fluting, boy.
They will be playing Stars and Stripes Forever. Hopefully not forever.
That was quite the rendition there, I gotta say. Especially the flute up the nose part. That was very avant-garde.
But yes, Lisa saves performance from a bunch of the jerk people watching a school performance of music.
Which is Springfield, to be fair. They're all jerks.
Yes, that is accurate.
But Lisa does a great job. Everyone cheers for her. And then she goes to see Bleeding Gums Murphy to tell him about it and finds his bed being made by a nurse because he has passed. She is, of course...
Yes, very upset. I was going to ask you, does it bother you that we don't see his death?
Not really. Mainly because that tends to be the way it happens in hospitals, especially with older people. It's like you go there one day and they're great, and then you go there the next day and they're gone.
I would have liked... I mean, not even that Lisa sees it. I am fine with Lisa not seeing it. Mm-hmm. I would have liked at least a 10-second clip of... Or, like of him just, like, in bed and it happens. It can even be just be of his EKG meter and it just goes a flat line or something. Like, I feel like one of my problems with this is that his death doesn't, like, it doesn't, I don't, I'm not connected to it. Because
see, I thought that was one of like the most important parts of the episode is a lot of times, especially for children, death happens and you're not there for it. It's just one day you show up and somebody's gone. And that felt very real to me.
I know, but we are not Lisa.
That's true, but this episode generally is from her perspective.
This is definitely a Lisa episode. But the audience, we see things that Lisa does not see. And I can empathize with that, with Lisa without actually having to see everything from her perspective. If the audience sees Bleeding Gums Murphy death without Lisa seeing it, I can still understand that Lisa was not there to see him die.
Yeah, but why do you need to see him die? I don't understand.
Moaning Lisa was in season one. That is right. The first time and the last time we have seen Bleeding Gums Murphy at this point. And we have, in the meantime, this is season six, so 5 years have gone by. In the meantime, we have not seen Lisa very even mention Bleeding Gums Murphy, has she? Your recollection?
No, I'm pretty sure she has mentioned him once in relation to being her hero or something like that in between.
But we haven't seen him, correct?
We have not seen him, no.
No. And so we get a very, like, he's on screen for maybe 2-3 minutes, and then he is gone again.
Okay.
I just feel like if I had seen him pass myself, like, that, it just, that, like, because, like, it's just such an intimate thing. It's just a sad and, like, surprising thing. I think us seeing him pass before Lisa knows, it allows us to build up some sort of, like, an expectation of anxiety and sadness because we know that Lisa is going to be upset.
I guess. I don't feel like that's necessary at all. Like I said, I feel like this episode is all about Lisa's reaction to loss. Honestly, they could have had almost anything happen to her, but I feel like this, short of another family member, a close family member dying, this was the easiest way for them to say, hey, who's somebody important to Lisa? We want to see what happens to Lisa when something is taken from her and her go through the grief process. And I don't think us seeing Bleeding Gums Murphy has any effect on that.
It's not a big problem. I just wish we had seen it. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I don't like any time we have a character die off screen. Like it generally diminishes the importance of them dying. Anytime you see a character, like you think of Poochie, Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie.
Mm-hmm.
He left to go save his home planet and he died in the middle. Like, that's what I feel like anytime in any movie or television show or comic book or book, anything I read or see or watch, if a character dies off screen, there, I feel like there should be a very good reason for it.
Are you caught up on Game of Thrones?
I mean, I know what happens.
Okay. So spoiler alert for anyone who has not seen this most recent Game of Thrones, but there is a character who dies completely off screen. Like, he's built up to be this ultimate badass, and an army marches into the castle he's in, and he tries to escape, and then he just dies off screen and no one cares. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at here. And for that particular character, it seemed like a bit of a loss, but for Bleeding Gums Murphy, I don't know. I feel like that wasn't that important to the episode, but we should probably move on from that. But yeah, I definitely see what you're saying.
I know it's the first of, there are many, like you said, this episode is about Lisa and her dealing with loss.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it gets lost in the shuffle somewhere, and they tonally mishandle it. Well, okay. Keep going. Go ahead. You describe I see you pulled clips about her kind of dealing. Every time she tries to talk to somebody, they just kind of don't handle it well.
That's true because, well, I feel like dealing with grief is something that is difficult for everyone at pretty much every stage of their lives. No one is particularly good at it. And I'll go ahead and play my next clip is when she goes to Homer and says, "Why won't it stop hurting, Dad?" Which is something that I could see anybody saying, but especially Lisa, because this is the first real major person that was close to her that she's lost. And Homer does not help a lot.
"Oh, Dad, why did he have to die?"
"Well, it's like the time that your cat Snowball got run over.
Uh-huh.
Remember, honey?"
"Yeah."
"What I'm saying is, all we have to do is go down to the pound and get a new jazz man."
"Oh, Dad!"
"Oh, I blew it again. What?"
So, yes, that is Homer's attempt to help, an abject failure. Okay, fair enough. Lisa then runs off to Bart's treehouse where Bart finds her, and Bart tries to help, but is actually a little more successful than Homer. He says that he believes that when you die, you have to come back as whatever you want, and he would come back as a butterfly because no one suspects the butterfly, and he apparently plans to burn down Springfield Elementary as a butterfly. And we get a nice, you know, cutaway to that with Principal Skinner being taken away in chains because apparently that's what happens when you burn down a school as a butterfly. The principal gets blamed. Which, it's funny, it's a good gag, but it doesn't really help Lisa. So instead, Lisa goes to see Grandpa, because, you know, Grandpa's old, and if he ever dies, which he won't because it's The Simpsons, that would probably affect all of them in a very similar way to how Bleeding Gums Murphy's death has affected Lisa.
"Death stalks you at every turn!"
"Grandpa?"
"Well, it does!" "There it is! Death!"
"It's only Maggie."
"Oh, yeah. You know, at my age, the mind starts playing tricks. So, death!"
"That's only the cat."
"Oh, death!"
"That's Maggie again, Grandpa."
"Oh, where were we? Death!"
So, that is death, apparently, for Grandpa. He sees it everywhere, and we actually get a nice little callback gag later in the episode where he is wandering outside and sees the bird bath as death. So,
Very scary, those bird baths.
Indeed, they are the personification of death. We then move on to the next morning at breakfast, where Lisa still can't get over his death. And she asks, why won't it stop hurting? And Marge actually comes up with a pretty good suggestion. Why don't you, do something to commemorate his memory? Homer then suggests a tattoo because it preserves the things you love. And apparently, Homer has a Starland vocal band tattoo, which I don't know who the Starland vocal band is. Do you, Robbie? Yeah,
Starland vocal. I know of them. I've heard a couple songs.
Well, apparently Homer was a big fan at one point.
Well, imagine, what do you think the music would sound like from a band called the Starland Vocal Band?
Glam rock is what I'm assuming.
Pop.
Pop.
Very, okay. Like a picture ABBA, and then like make them like 10 times more vanilla.
Wow.
That's my take on Starland Vocal Band. Like, I think ABBA is very good at being a pop band. Starland Vocal Band is super generic to me. I haven't listened to a lot of their music, but Afternoon Delight is the one everyone knows.
If you've heard that makes sense.
Yeah, which, not a good song.
Well, that's just your opinion, man.
It is my opinion that in 1976 they released that song and it is not good.
Well, there you go. Anyway, moving along, we then go to Bleeding Gums Murphy's funeral, where Lisa is the only person, and we have Reverend Lovejoy giving the worst eulogy ever.
Isn't anybody going to show up?
Well, Lisa, we've waited an hour. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to bid farewell to Blood and Guts Murphy.
No, it was Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Ugh. Anyway, Bloody Gums Murphy was quite the sousaphone player.
Saxophone! He was a jazz musician! You didn't know him! Nobody knew him! But he was a great man! And I won't rest until all of Springfield knows the name Bleeding Gums Murphy!
And I won't rest until I've gotten a hot dog!
Homer, this is a cemetery!
Hot dogs! Get your hot dogs here! Woohoo!
What do? Follow my husband around?
Lee, he's putting my kids through college.
So, yes, we also see the wonderful hot dog vendor that follows Homer around to, you know, capture all those dollars that would have been wasted had he not. And that is the end of Act 2.
This episode at this point deviates from Lisa trying to deal with her, like, at this point, she is trying to deal with her grief by memorializing Bleeding Gums Murphy, right?
Yes.
Okay. I feel like that, I don't know. I really, like, I watched this episode. I was not, most episodes I really look forward to. This one I was not, because I remember not liking it very much. And watching it again, I still kind of don't like it that much. I mean, it's still funny, and it is still, like, of the golden year Simpsons, there's no really many bad, and it certainly it's not a bad episode.
It's just not a great episode.
I feel like it is flawed, and I feel like if how they handle Lisa, like, tonally, it is trying to tackle death. I feel like the problem I can identify. Like, I really thought about it. Like, I really wanted to, like, nail down why. Like, not liking something is fine, but I want to know why I don't like something, and it feels like that hot dog joke is funny. Like, one of the funniest things of the episode is that hot dog guy falling Homer around. But I feel like they want to have their cake and eat too with this episode and try and, like, hey, yeah, we're going to be modeling and focus on, like, Lisa trying to deal with grief and death. And those are very rough things. But we don't want it to bog down the episode, so we're going to throw in jokes that kind of mediate that. And if you want to do it at the end of, like, every time you feel like Lisa's getting somewhere, they throw in, like, this, I think I would like it more if this episode was just more serious. And that is, the Simpsons at this point, I think it's okay if they're serious. You know, I don't think it needs, everything has to have a gag tagged into it. When Lisa goes, if they had just gone to commercial right after her saying, I'm going to make sure everyone knows who Bleeding Gums Murphy is, I would have gone, okay. But then they tag in the joke. And this is not, also, like, just like the Bleeding Gums Murphy death thing, I don't think it's a big thing that they do this. Like I said, it's a funny joke. It's really good comedy writing. But that's the thing. Like, it feels very tonally at odds when they're trying, most very serious subjects. Like, I could say, yeah, you can lighten it up a little bit. But this is a 8-year-old girl dealing with the death of her hero. Maybe I want to feel that grief. Or maybe I want to feel that the feeling Lisa has.
I definitely agree with you there. Especially with the hot dog joke is a good joke. It's a very good joke. And I do feel like the second act would have been more impactful had ended on Lisa's grief. I kind of feel like looking at the act structure that they went with, that almost that you could have cut to act three after Lisa finds out that Buddingham's Murphy has died. And in that case, I feel like if you had just gone on and have a slightly longer act three, then having that joke after the funeral would not have been as tonally inconsistent. Because you could move directly from that onto the first, you know, part of Act 3, which is Bart getting his money from the lawsuit. So you move from a joke to another joke rather than a joke that reverberates for an entire commercial break. Like you said, it's tonally inconsistent in a way that, I don't want to say cheapens the emotional impact, but it kind of does.
Well, that little bit is not, like, when we get to the bit at the end, that's what I'm going to be. You guys prepare yourself, because I have those. That's when I'm really going to say something. But so Act 3 begins. Bart, we see Lionel Hutz, we see Phil Hartman very briefly inform Bart that he, of the $100,000 he won from his lawsuit involving the Crustios, I guess lawsuit, even though we haven't seen any court proceedings, Bart receives only $500 after legal fees, which have gone to both Phil Hartman and the two lawyer facsimiles he has brought along. Which are indeed. Both from.
They have very important skills, like holding billiard balls in your mouth.
They're both from the OJ trial. Those two lawyers are both famous. Lisa finally talks to Marge, which is probably what she should have just done in the first place. Marge is obviously the most empathetic of the family. And she says, well, you know, I frankly agree with Marge that, you know, someone may pass, but as long as you have them in your memory, they're still around in some way. And she says, like, maybe you have a tribute to him, maybe make people known. And like, that's kind of Lisa's her target anyway. And so that is what she decides to do. We find out Homer's really bad at improvising music. He just does the Mary Had a Little Lamb using different words. And he uses DDD first and then do do do, I believe, are the words. And then we get a bit of Lisa going to the only jazz station in Springfield.
Hi, I have a request. I would like you to do a tribute to Beating Gums Murphy, please.
No, I'd love to, little sister, but we don't have his album.
What if I could find it?
Well, I'd spin it for you, but, you know, ain't no one gonna hear it. Our broadcast range is only 23 feet, which makes us the most powerful jazz station in the entire U.S. of A.
Gee, your station has a lot of problems.
Tell me about it. Just look at our morning guy.
Hello, this is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you. Today, part 4 of our series of the agonizing pain in which I live every day.
Happy Mole Man to you, Matt.
Oh, thank you, Robbie. Happy Mole Man to you.
Yeah. We find out that, do we see what leads, we don't see what leads Lisa to the comic book guy, right? She just.
No, I think it's just the first place she checked, I guess.
Okay. But she goes to the comic book guy, go to the Android dungeon, and he has the album. He has Sex on the Beach. It is $250, which Lisa obviously does not have as an 8-year-old girl. That is a significant amount of money. Even I would not spend that much money on record. And then once comic book guy learns that he has died, he ups the price to $500. Which,
well, of course, once things are always more expensive when the artist dies.
I mean, it's true. It's still very as much, you know, a awful blow to Lisa, because that is the only copy of the album. And like, this is 1995. There was no way to get just like, hey, I need a song. I can just go to the internet and get it. You know, like, there's no iTunes. There's no torrents. Right. There's no, you know, in a town like Springfield, there aren't a lot of even music stores. So it'd be very hard to get this album, especially as a little girl.
Especially if it was only on vinyl.
Yeah.
Even that day, vinyl was getting hard to find.
Yeah, it's only, like, very recently has vinyl come back into cachet. Mr. Burns has a practical joke where he has just $500 bundle just pulling it along the street. Pretty mean.
Incredibly mean.
But Bart does have $500. And he goes to the comic book store, to the Android's Dungeon, to spend that money, which I mean, I would too if I just had money I burned in a hole in my pocket.
You would just walk on down to the comic book store and just throw it down on something.
I probably, yeah, that sounds like something I would do. But, and he's enticed by the ultimate pog, which is Steve Allen's face. And it says this Steve Allen invented pogs on it, I think. The inventor of the pog, I believe. Yeah, that's what it does. It says Steve Allen, inventor of the pog, yeah. Which I don't think Steve Allen invented pogs. That's just my guess. I don't know who did, though.
That's a good question. I don't remember.
I don't know. But he remembers that Lisa was the only one who believed him when he said he was hurt. When his stomach hurt, everyone else denied. Lisa believed him. And so he buys that album for her, gives it to her, and says he plans on getting his money back by inflicting himself with flesh-eating bacteria, which is in the new Crustio's box.
Yeah, that sounds a little more serious than a jagged metal O.
They're both very serious. I would not do either of those things. They could
No.
They're bad for that to. But you know, you appreciate his motivation here. You see him, and it is a good callback to the very beginning of the episode where you know sometimes the Simpsons when they do that thing where we have the first act, some crazy hijinks happens, and then it leads to the actual plot. They just kind of ignore all that stuff. In this case, they actually have it tie back, and that's nice. But, this leads to Lisa bringing the album to the jazz station and her playing it. And this is my biggest problem with this episode. All the other things are very minor.
Mm-hmm.
This ending, where she takes it to the radio station, we get a mysterious lightning strike from the sky. It electrocutes the radio station and therefore exponentially expands its broadcast range, and everyone gets to hear real jazz this time, which I do appreciate that. They play his album, they play Bleeding Up Summer, they play Sax on the Beach, and it is actual jazz music, and everyone in town can hear it, and Lisa's happy. And then we get Bleeding Up Murphy's face appear in clouds in the sky, and then three facsimiles of James Earl Jones' characters. First, Mustafa from Lion King. And then Darth Vader from Star Wars. And then finally, actual James Earl Jones. It undercuts the emotion.
Well,
it's okay. Discounting the fact it's very cartoony, which I don't care that much about that. Like, it is very, very like, hey, let's have Lisa's dealing with loss and with grief.
Mm-hmm.
And how to deal with the fact that she didn't get to see him pass. You know, she didn't get a quote-unquote final word with him.
Yeah.
When you give her that final word, it feels like it has minimalized everything that happens in this episode. Like, that is my biggest problem.
The thing is, I interpreted this as not actually happening, as this being an outgrowth of what is going on in Lisa's mind right now. Everything basically after she says, this is for you, bleeding gums. I kind of felt like that is what's going on in her head. She feels like she is finally getting that moment with him, because she feels like his music is him, and he's a jazz musician. That's not a statement that's too far out there. So I didn't really see this as, you know, that crazy. I definitely see where you're coming from. And if I had interpreted it as actually happening, it'd be like, this is extra weird even for The Simpsons. But like I said, I kind of gave it the benefit of the doubt where it just said, this is just Lisa's imagination. This is what she would want to happen.
I first want to correct myself. I think I said Mufasa, Lion King, Mufasa. I would just make sure I said that correct first.
Uh-huh.
And secondly, we have literally seen God reach down and save Rod or Todd Flanders.
That's true.
Like, and that is not up for debate. Like, that child would have died if God himself...
Well, he would have gone further down the river.
Matt.
What?
He would have had a very bad situation.
Yes.
And I feel like The Simpsons clearly denote dream sequences for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they very clearly... they, for, like, 98% of the time, they will clearly tell you when something is real and when something is not real. When something is being... when it's something is in someone's head, when something is a vision or a daydream or something like that. Because they do it a lot. It is a staple of The Simpsons. They don't do that.
No, and it's probably me just giving them, you know, the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I see where you're coming from. And if
they intended it to be like Lisa seeing that and it not actually happening, I want that delineation. I want to know that this is just Lisa having her thoughts, which I would be fine with. But I read that as this is completely happening. There's an actual lightning strike, like that actually happens. We see everyone in town hearing the music, and then we see. And if that was happening, that'd be okay too. Like some mystical, like him striking from, you know, from the afterlife, and I'd be okay with that. But as soon as she talks to him again, and then Jasmine plays again, I feel like they want this to be about character, but then they undercut their own, like Lisa's own growth.
I'm not sure I understand. Why do you say they undercut her growth?
Because, okay, Lisa the entire time is dealing with the fact she didn't get to say goodbye to him. And then she gets to say goodbye to him after she has done all that stuff.
I don't think it's about her not getting to say goodbye to him. It's about her missing him.
Either way, if you're missing somebody, like, it is very much like, it is a very rough and harsh thing, like, of death, is that after a person is gone, they're gone. It is real. It's like, and all you can do is kind of live in your memories of that person. But if they're going to tackle that subject, I want them to do it. I want them to go for it. I want it to be rough and hard. I want to cry. Like, and I, at the ending, I'm just going like, oh, okay.
I mean, like I said, I can see where you're coming from. It didn't affect my opinion of this episode nearly as much as it did yours, I guess.
I don't know. It really, I was, I don't want people to think that I hate this episode or anything. I'm glad that they did this. I want to see it. I just feel the execution. There's it was a weird thing, like different showrunners and it from a different, like maybe, I don't know if this was in season 3 or 4, do you think it would be different? I don't think so. I feel like,
no,
I was looking at all the Lisa episodes on our best episode ever list. And I was like looking at them and I'm thinking like, what is that? What is the theme of that episode? What is that? What is, you know, Lisa's pony or Lisa the beauty queen or Malibu Stacy or Lisa's substitute or Lisa's wedding, which we just did. Like, I'm like thinking about what are those things teaching Lisa? What is the theme? What, like, are those types of episodes where Lisa is learning a lesson about life? Like, what does it do at the end in particular? And it feels like they all are way more successful than this was. I don't know. We've gone on more on this one, an episode I don't like, than we have on episodes that I really, really like. When I don't like something, I at least want to know, when I'm doing a podcast about it, I at least want to like be able to like
expound. Articulate why.
Yeah, exactly. I want to like, I just don't want to say, oh, it's dumb or something. I want to express it. We'll rank it at the end of the show. Probably going to be divisive. We'll find out. We'll see.
I'm not too attached to it, so we'll see.
I've looked at that list, Matt. I a lot of times I'm like, okay, I know the general area, and then we'll work it out. I have like a specific spot. I would not probably put it above. I'm thinking you probably would put it higher than it, but we'll see. No submissions for my favorite episode for this episode. If you have a specific episode that is your favorite, please email us simpsonshowpod@gmail.com explaining why, and I'll read it on air. Next up, Matt, it is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group to what people are talking about the week or two after the episode debuted. It is archived on Google Groups. You want to look there and find it. Simpsons Archive also does an excellent job. They don't have everything, but they have a good kind of summary of things. When I can't find a certain thing, I'll also check there. Mostly average thoughts on this one.
It's always weird how if we think it's a really great episode, they are so divided, but the mediocre episodes are always mediocre for everybody.
Yeah, there's a couple people are like, yeah, it's really great, but most people are like, meh. Like, but surprisingly, not a lot who hate it. That's the thing. Like, there's always people who love it, but it's very strange. But it's mostly just like, hey, it was an episode, and it's kind of surprised me because it was from, you know, Gian Reese, who had done earlier seasons, the ones where people, I think, on the news group were the seasons they liked the most, like up to season 4, it seemed after that is when they start shifting away, but they just think it's average. So mostly B's and C's.
Weird.
Yeah. We can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week was, what is your favorite moment from Springfield Elementary? Tons of great answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To really be fair, there's a lot to pick from.
There is a lot. And I only, of course, got a small sampling. I appreciate everyone's responses. Wish I had time for everything. First, Scott at Pure Cromulence. Lunch Lady Doris, have you got any grease? Yes. Yes, we do. Then grease me up, woman. Okie dokie. There's a lot of Lunch Lady Doris and Willie in here.
Yeah.
Billy at Bill Rackow. When Lunch Lady Doris is grinding gym mats, there's very little meat in these gym mats. Ryan at EID9. Skinner, why aren't these uniforms colored last? I don't understand. I get them from the same place I buy mother's dresses. Good lord. Mother's in the park. So, I don't... But it's not like... I guess Skinner was a... That moment always confused me. Because it all it did was
make... He's scared his mom is going to have crazy tie-dye clothes.
I guess so. Let's see. We have... John at Petrie JT. Mrs. Grabopple and Principal Skinner were in the closet making babies, and I saw one of the babies, and the baby looked at me. But, I mean, that technically doesn't, that quote isn't in the elementary school, but I, you know, it is about elementary school, so I.
Indeed.
Yeah. We also have Amanda at Drawn to Insanity. Father, Uncle Apu, a teacher was in the closet with the principal and has had as many arms as Vishnu, and they were all very busy. I like that as a good counterpoint. Holly, mm-hmm. I have to go to the memorial for Martin Prince held in the Springfield Elementary Gym and dial in for Nerder. The sign up front of the school says to tell the kindergartners he's in a long vacation. The band plays a funerary version of the Rocky theme, and the Skinner opens the service with, Martin was known by many names. Martin Priss, Martin Princess, Fartin Prince, Martin the Brown Nose, Reindeer. And the service closes with the AV Club slideshow of Martin's best moments, like playing the lute and being pummeled by tomatoes hanging upside down, while Sarah McLaughlin's I Will Remember You plays. Hilarious. Melanie's answer, when Flanders becomes the principal of the school and Superintendent Chalmers hears them on the PA system talking about the Lord. Thank the Lord. That sounded like a prayer. A prayer in a public school. God has no place within these walls, just like facts don't have a place within an organized religion. That's good. Tim, any moment involving grease, Groundskeeper Willie, and air vents. We have, again, many, lots of grease in Groundskeeper Willie. Dana, the Halloween episode where Bart says, surely something will come along to save the two Simpson children. Which I believe was it in this season's Trails of Horror? Season 6?
This season's or last season's?
It was one of the two. Wasn't the same as the Shinning? It was, I thought the cafeteria at one was the same Trails of Horror as the Shinning. I get them all mixed up. Sarah's,
I don't think so.
Okay. Sarah's answer, nibbles. Chew through my ball sack. It's childish and hilarious every time. I just chuckled saying it, so yes. And finally, Holly, in Lisa's Date with Density, Lisa gives Milhouse a note during lunch to pass on to Nelson, cut to the note being passed forward, and Nelson opens it. Guess who likes you? He looks back to see Milhouse, who is waving at him, and then it cuts to Milhouse being loaded into an ambulance. Something about Milhouse's eyebrows during the note passing and the abrupt cut to the ambulance is just...
Yeah.
It also, I also like the moment where Lisa is trying to talk to Milhouse, and the guy, the EMT, is like, he can't hear you. His ears are stuffed with gauze or something along with lines. So bad. Okay, Matt, what is your answer?
I am going to have to go with the very recent to us, a future of Springfield Elementary, where all the students are being taught by Troy McClure and it's sponsored by Pepsi. I thought that was pretty hilarious. A little too accurate.
Pepsi?
Partial credit.
My answer is also in Lisa's Date with Density, but it is... Nelson and outside with the Hoos and Willie. I think I've included this moment in another listener question. I can't remember, but I find it endlessly delightful. No, the noose, the hoozle on the noose, the noose on the hoozle.
And then the noozle. Noodles, what noodles?
I laugh so hard every time. I don't know. Next week's question. What is your favorite, or I hear, we'll do it this way. Your favorite Simpsons cover/parody song. So a non-original Simpsons song. I was going to do just covers, but I don't think there's enough of them to consider. Most of the time when they are using an existing song, it is a parody. So best cover or parody of a Simpsons. Best cover parody, best Simpsons favorite. I am just having trouble.
Yeah.
Favorite Simpsons cover/parody song. Tons of great choices. It's going to happen. I have to think about it. Matt, are you ready?
I'm ready.
It is time for our next segment. It's time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where I and Matt will try and challenge each other, stump each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. We have a wager for this season, season six. The host that does not win has to mow the other's lawn in their wife's Sunday, in their wife's Sunday best. What's the tally? Let's look at that. I know I'm super close on this one, right, Matt?
Uh-huh, that's true. At any point, you could totally overtake me.
Any point, we have, I believe, how many episodes to go? Not very many.
Two after this one.
Three. We have three. Three episodes after this one. I am down 24 points. So theoretically, if I get all my points in the next four episodes and Matt gets zero, I could still tie.
It could totally happen.
So I am, until, if I lose this one, I'm just going to do it. So, because I'm mathematically eliminated. Matt, I'm gonna start us off. I'm going to give you an easy question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
These are all from one episode. They are all from Brick Like Me, the Lego
episode. Oh, the Lego episode. The Lego interesting. Episode. All right, we'll see.
I wrote about it for our Patreon this past week. Brick Like Me shares many similarities with what movie?
The Lego movie?
That is correct.
Shocking.
I know.
All right, your first question. In Raging Abe Simpson and his grumbling grandson in The Curse of the Flying Hellfish, who does Bart bring to Grandparents Day?
Who does he bring to Grandparents Day?
Grandparents Day, uh-huh.
That'd be Abraham Simpson?
You are correct, sir. I would have just said to the grandpa.
Well, only Bart knows him as grandpa.
That's
Bart
true.
And Lisa and Maggie, theoretically. Your medium mm-hmm. question, Matt. Comic book guy in Brick Like Me admits to being an AmFop. What does AmFop stand for?
AmFop. AmFop? I have no idea.
Adult male fan of princesses.
Oh, of course. Hey, aren't we all AmFops?
Not the way he means it.
That's probably true. That's kind of creepy the way he means it. Anyway, moving on. What was the name of the agreement that Grandpa's unit entered into after finding the paintings in The Curse of the Flying Hellfish?
Tontet? Is that...
Try one more time.
Did I say that right?
No.
I always think of, what, Moose? Is that the guy's name? Or,
yes.
Yeah, I always think of Moose saying it.
All them pretty pictures.
Yeah. it's not a... I swear, it's just Tontet something. I thought it was a Tontet. I don't know. That's my answer. I thought that was it. What is it?
It's a tontine.
Tontine! Ah!
So close.
Okay. Your hard question, Matt. In the real-life-sized advent calendar, which character represents Christmas Day?
Okay. I'm going to go with Mo.
You were incorrect.
I'm shocked.
It is Maggie.
Aww.
I think it's because she wears the little starfish.
That's probably true.
I think that's... I don't know why they put Maggie there, but that'd be my, like, why... In my head, why I would think they would, because she's, like, the star.
Yeah.
My hard question. Give me it.
All right. Your hard question. How many times was Bart supposed to pull on the rope if he ran out of air?
Oh. I appreciate that this is from an episode that I have seen a billion times, and it's still... Uh-huh. And still can't get the answers. It's a lot. 88?
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It is 63. 64 for the treasure.
Of course. okay. That gives us 1 point each. I am mathematically eliminated.
Aww.
Matt has won. We will...
Just blame Eric for that.
I'm not... It's nothing to do with Eric. I would still be losing by double digits, even with or without Mr. Goodnight's questions. So, it's fine. Matt, you're just like, you're an unstoppable behemoth. I can't stop. I'm just like an average pitcher and I'm facing Barry Bonds in his prime. I just can't, it doesn't matter. Like, I'd have to just like, the only way to beat you is to walk you. And that's just like, just to give you the victory ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Okay. We can move on to our final segment. Segment we end every single episode with. It is time for best episode ever.
Best episode ever.
Best episode ever is the part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Okay. You want me to tell you where I would put it, or do you want to just tell me where you would put it, Matt?
I think you should go first, because I enjoyed parts of this episode, but I'm definitely not wed to a decent spot for this.
Okay. I have it. Okay. So I really thought through it. Like, now obviously it's a Lisa episode. The first thing I looked at was all the Lisa episodes. And, you know, our third and fourth ranked episodes are Lisa episodes. Lisa's Wedding and Lisa's Substitute. And obviously not as good as that. Lisa on Ice. Nope. Lisa's Rival. Nope. I Love Lisa. Lisa the Greek. Mm-mm. Then going further, those are like in the 20s, and then we're getting into, let's see, the 30s with Lisa the Greek. Like, here we go. 65 is Lisa the Beauty Queen. 67 is Lisa's Pony, which Lisa's Pony is more of a Homer episode. Lisa Beauty Queen is certainly a Lisa episode. I don't think it's as good as that.
I'm agreeing with you so far.
And then there's, let's say, I'm jumping down to 86, which is Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington. Not as good as that. And at down to that point, we're in like the high 80s or low 90s. After some thought, I would probably put it square at number 90.
Better than the auto show, huh?
Yeah, but I could go, that's me being like, I could go lower than Barth, like 94, Barth of Daredevil.
Yeah, Barth the Daredevil was pretty good. I think this one has the hallmarks of a better episode. There are some good jokes, and I want to give them some credit for really trying to do something, but I feel like they were just a little scared to go all the way. And because I guess I feel like the writers and director had this idea of The Simpsons as a primetime comedy-based show and weren't willing to push that as far as was really necessary to give this topic the attention it deserves. And I think they just struck a bad balance.
Sounds like a lot of the recent Al Jean show run episodes.
It really does. I think we're sensing a theme here. I honestly think it's better than, you know, Barth the Daredevil, Three Men in a Comic Book, Dead Potting Society. Marginally, not a lot, but I don't think it's better than the auto show. So I would probably put it at 91.
You think the auto show is better?
I do. I love the auto show.
This episode gets points just because it mostly is about Lisa. I would not, like, Otto. Otto is a fine side character. There's a reason there's been very few episodes with even a large, like a substantial portion that's not the main focus being Otto. When you put a lot of attention on it. 91, Matt? Otto show? Really?
Like I said, I'm not really wed to this episode, so yeah.
Okay. We're putting in this low. I will compromise and say it is below the auto show. Sure. I was trying to. Okay. Round Springfield at number 91 on our list. Whew. Curious how people feel about that. But I can't. Like, old money at 82, you know, with Grandpa dealing with losing someone.
Very, even involving something supernatural, they do a better job in this.
Yeah, and it's not really about grief at that point, because Grandpa's an old man and he's theoretically lost people at that point, but it is about the memory of her, but of what's the name of the lady? We've had this as a trivia question. Beatrice, yes, of course. Beatrice. That was my grandmother's name. How could I forget that?
I don't know. You're terrible for grandson?
Well, I don't have any living grandparents, so it doesn't... I'm sorry to them. I apologize, Grandma. You can't hear me, but I'm sorry. So still, number one on our list is Cape Fear. Last place is Homer's Odyssey, number 118. It's still holding strong. How long?
Probably a long time still yet.
Yeah, we still got some time. What's our next episode, man?
Let's see. Our next episode is The Springfield Connection. Aw, yeah.
Marge is a cop.
Wouldn't it be funny if so-and-so had this job?
Come on, Matt. I think at this point they were still... That wasn't run into the ground too much. Although, if you listen to those people on the news groups, they were already like, oh, man, what are they going to do? Just give everyone a different job every... Whatever. Okay. We'll talk about that next week. We can wrap it up before we go. Find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. And please check out my comic book podcast. It is Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. But if you haven't been floating down a river, raise a glass to me because I'll be doing the same this weekend.
Sunscreen, Matt. Wear sunscreen.
I'm wearing way more clothing than is appropriate to be in the water.
Honestly, after my last experience on tubes, I would wear a long sleeve shirt and and like a giant hat. And if I could find swim pants that weren't like sweltering, I would wear those too.
Yep.
Because
that's how you survive in Florida.
Yeah, that was really bad time last time I did that. But yeah, with that, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching the Simpsons.
Shh.